Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
It's Nick and Neil's Summer Millwall History Show.
Neil, Corinthians, one of the great names in English and arguably world football. A fascinating club.
Yeah, they really were. When amateur football was almost as good as a bigger stand in professional football. This club were an absolutely fascinating club. There's a couple of books been written on them and well worth the read. Yeah. But they were founded in 1882 when a notice was sent out to players from public schools, which is probably the most unusual thing you could have.
Well, which was the in the public schools, whatever the game became, the public schools were the mainstay of the game, and the FA and all of the major names were, you know, were derived from the playing fields of Eton, Harrow, and the others, and Corinthians were part of that, weren't they? Just to outline, listeners, the reason why we're talking about it. Corinthians were, as Neil said, an amateur side based around public school boys and the well-to-do, I think.
And universities, yeah.
There was
a lexa non descripta, whatever that means.
It means a law unwritten. It means I've always you nicked my Latin phrase. I wanted to get that in there, Neil Fritzl. I wanted to say the Latin phrase. It means a law unwritten. The Corinthians, listeners, were.
It basically meant that membership was exclusively to former public school board and university students, although there were a few exceptions made. But they're still around. The Corinthian Casuals, they merged with another great amateur side, the Casuals, in 1939.
Yep.
But this was a fantastic club. They provided 86 England internationals and 16 captains. I was reading some years ago, this might have changed, but that was some kind of record back then, especially 16 captains. They didn't play in a league. They played all their home games on a number of grounds in and around London. The Oval, Queen's Club, where the tennis has been played.
Oh, it's great, isn't it? I love all this.
Crystal Palace. Not the new Park as we actually know. But then they had a permanent ground, so they could... Yeah, but that became their permanent ground.
They could enter cup competition. As you say, they played predominantly friendlies and I suppose local one-off cup ties or, you know, kind of shields or whatever, that kind of thing. Just it was seen as training games and an amateur pursuit. And the reason that we're mentioning Corinthians so much, listeners, is that Millwall had a series of games actually, including an epic series of FA Cup ties in the 1930s, now which we'll come back to, but they almost represented two polar opposites. I was struck by, on the one hand, you've got the Corinthians, which is coming from wealth and privilege. I don't think that's too much to say, you know, the kind of well-to-do and the great and the good would play for Corinthians as amateurs, so they weren't professionals. And then at the polar opposite, you've got Millwall or Millwall Athletic from the Isle of Dogs, but nevertheless, one of the great names of pre-First World War football. And the two seem to be, I don't know, the opposite ends of the social spectrum. And we played them a few times, didn't we, over time?
Yeah, most definitely. And the reason they wouldn't ever play in a league, and I correct myself where I said they did join a league, they didn't join a league. Mm-hmm. It was the travelling, and it was seen as being too much of a problem for a lot of their members, most of whom were doctors, teachers, businessmen. And to ask them to give up so many Saturdays in a year...
Too much to ask.
Yeah, was seen as basically too much to ask. Yeah. But they essentially played friendly games, they played old public schools and things like that, but they did tour. They toured a lot. They toured Christmas and New Year.
Yeah.
The year before, just before they played Millwall, actually, they toured the North East and they played Newcastle and Middlesbrough.
Yeah.
Warming up for the mighty Millwall.
Of course.
By playing an Athenian League representative side and winning 9-1. Yeah, there was great confidence at the time, especially in the media, that they were going to come and cause Millwall problems. Millwall had been beaten 6-1 at West Bromwich Albion on Boxing Day. And then bipolar Millwall beat Blackpool 3-1 2 days later, but then lost 4-1 at Bury.
Yeah.
And this mob were warming up by playing Newcastle and Middlesbrough. But as you quite rightly say, we played them quite a lot. We played the first game I could find was in 1903, which was a 3-3 draw.
Yeah, I suppose these would have been friendlies and cut ties and the like.
Yeah, they're all friendlies, I believe.
I mean, the thing that struck me with Corinthians, we're going to come back to the series of, I think epic is an overused word in football now, but I think these three games in 1930 between Millwall and Corinthians qualify for epic. We will come back to those in a moment, listeners. But I think the other thing is, before we go into that, they had this kind of ethos, the Corinthians, that they were the Corinthian spirit. And what does that mean, listeners? That means that it was a level of sportsmanship that was seen as the bar that others aspired to aim for, Neil. And I love this thing. I've got this off of Wiki. I don't know if you found this or you looked at the same site, but the Corinthian spirit meant that they wouldn't accept penalty kicks on the basis that no gentleman would ever commit a deliberate foul. And if a penalty was awarded against the Corinthians, their goalkeeper would stand aside, leaning languidly on the goalpost and watch the ball being kicked into his own net. So they would concede a goal rather than acknowledge the existence of a penalty kick. And if they got one, I love this, their captain took a very short run up, as they put it here, and gave the ball a jolly good whack, chipping it over the crossbar, deliberately not score a penalty. You wouldn't get away with that down the Den these days, Neil, would you?
You wouldn't have got away with that down the Den back then, either.
The Athletic ground, no. I think that was the clash of lex non scripta, the law not written, means that you've got this idea of sportsmanship, very English-British idea, that there's a higher level of the game, which meant that you didn't try and take every chance you could get to score because it was ungentlemanly, and that didn't cut it, I don't think, Neil, and the Dockers' idea of how the game would be played.
Yeah, no, well, it would have been one of our favourite phrases, not the Millwall I know.
Watching Bart Bielkowski lean languidly against his goalpost whilst the opposition chip it into the goal for a free goal. This Corinthian idea, though, Neil, took quite a bit of hold around the world. I mean, there is famously the Brazilian Corinthians Paulista, which I think that was Socrates and I think one or two others, Zico, I believe, that was their club. So the idea of this high-minded very British idea of sportsmanship took quite a bit of hold. There's I see a Maltese side, Zeton Corinthians in Malta, and even Real Madrid apparently adopted their white shirts in honour of the Corinthian spirit. It was quite an idea, wasn't it, that took hold amongst the higher classes, I think is probably the best way to put it, in this country.
Yeah, but let's not forget that it was actually an Englishman that took football to Brazil.
So, yeah. Yeah. So they were evangelists for the game. They took it everywhere, didn't they? And so
it was probably an Englishman that formed the Corinthians over there. Well, I'm not quite sure.
No. But I think you're right. I think it was quite common, especially in South America, for the game to be. I mean, I think a separate strand immediately, but I know that Exeter City were the kind of the carriers of the flame of the football, and other teams too. Corinthians being just one example of it. So they represented a certain level of class and a certain idea of how the game ought to be played. And they met up with their polar opposites, Millwall Football Club, in 1930 across three massively attended games, Neil. Well, the three that you've picked out here are. The attendances are really striking, aren't they, for these three FA Cup ties?
Yeah, that just showed what a team we were actually playing.
Mm.
That you've actually got this team that only plays friendlies and plays old boys teams and whatever, but the crowds were absolutely phenomenal. But then again, you look at the side the Corinthians had out,
yeah,
and the crowd, and yeah, well, you can see why 45,000 I think turned up to the first game at Crystal Palace, where the gates opened at 10 p.m.
10 a.m. in the morning. This is a game played on the 11th of January, listeners, 1930, at the old Crystal Palace, which was historically the FA Cup final venue. Very large. I think they played all sorts of games there, cricket as well, I believe, Neil, in its time. But it was famously the FA Cup.
Yeah, they had cup finals there for a number of years and a number of times, didn't they? I think it was the last venue in London to host the FA Cup final before Wembley.
I believe you're right. Very large, wide open expanse. There are plenty of photos available online of games being played there, listeners, at the old Crystal Palace. It does look like almost a cricket pavilion style of an idea. So it must have been a mere of a place to watch a game of football. It's now, I believe, the site of it is now the Athletic Stadium, which is also now falling into rack and ruin, apparently, the National Sports Centre, but that is where the ground was. 45,000 people packed into the Crystal Palace ground. As Neil says, gates opened at 10 a.m. Accompanied to the band of the Honourable Artillery Company playing marching tunes and I don't know what else from 1:15.
That was from about 1:15. So you actually get a sense of what an occasion it was. If you've got the band of the Honourable Artillery Company playing, it's
absolutely,
well, it leaves our pre-match entertainment somewhere in the shade, doesn't it?
I wouldn't mind listening to the band of the Honourable Artillery Company before a game. It would beat some of the club stuff that we listen to at the Den these days. The first cup tie then, and keep in mind this is amateur versus professional, listeners, the first cup tie finishes a 2-2 draw. And I found a match report here from the Daily News, old newspaper now gone, dated after the game, 13th of Jan, 1930. And it's the last kick amidst fog and mud and mist. The last kick of the game placed the Corinthians on equal terms with Millwall. True to its reputation, says Frank Thorogood, true to its reputation, the Crystal Palace ground furnished high drama upon the occasion of the cup tie between the Corinthians and Millwall. About a quarter of an hour from the end, Neil, driving rain and sleet had begun to fall when the game was 30 minutes old, and that gave way to a heavy snowstorm, with Millwall leading 2-1. Just before the final whistle, the old Cambridge Blue, this gives you a sense of the reportage, the old Cambridge Blue, C.T. Ashton, enforced the necessity of a replay, although the crowd were half blinded by snow and convinced that Millwall were still leading. they equalised amidst swirling snowflakes and phantom forms of the players making the drama complete. I think that's the kind of journalism that ought to come back. I love that poetic turn of phrase. That's how we want to read our match reports.
Yeah, you wouldn't get a job on the South London Press like that.
I want to be paid by the word.
Yeah, well, just a word on C.T. Ashton. It was actually Claude Ashton, was a qualified chartered accountant with Price Waterhouse and Company.
Right.
Peter works on London Stock Exchange, and he was an amateur international who remained the last player to captain England on his only international full appearance. Right. I believe he died in a plane crash in World War II. But that's what type of team this was. You had Benjamin Howard Baker, the goalkeeper. He'd won two England caps and tried to qualify for Wimbledon, competed at the Olympic Games. Alfred Bauer was an amateur and full international, the last member of the London Stock Exchange to play in the top flight.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Knight and Chadder, they were both amateur internationals, as was Waywell. Freddie Ewer, he was a full and amateur international. Walter Robbins had actually played cricket for Middlesex in England. Norman Creek was a full and amateur international. Graham Doggart was an England international, was chairman of the FA. He was the captain of the full team and another amateur international. Jackie Hagan, I think we'll come on to.
Yeah.
Was a full international, lieutenant colonel in the army.
Yeah.
William Stewart, his father was actually a director of Sheffield United. He was a Cambridge Blue. So we weren't expected to win that game. Buchan, the great Charles Buchan.
Yeah. A journalist and used to produce an annual, didn't he? The boys' annual.
That's right. Millwall disorganised owing to injuries which prevented W.I. Bryant. Yeah, Bill Bryant. Yeah. They Corinthians should safely enter the fourth round. The forward should be too strong for the unreliable Millwall defence. Where's Bart Bierkowski and Sean Hutchins?
90 years later, listeners, and we're still disorganised. We're still clinging on for grim death. Somehow that's the story of our club. So 2-2 draw in the first match. A hard game, said Tom Thorne. Old name there from the Isle of Dogs days, the chairman of the Millwall club. Tom continued, I think the Corinthians did deserve a draw. And the same opinion was expressed to the Daily News by Lieutenant Colonel J. Gettins, the old Millwall and Corinthian forward who is now associated with the Army Educational Corps at the Horse Guard. So I think that's probably how maybe Gettins had arranged for the band for the pre-match entertainment. So 2-2 in the first match from the Crystal Palace. That was took us back to the Den, Neil, of course, for the replay, played a few days later. Another 1-1 draw in front of 33,000 there. So we're already on 78,000 people that have seen these two games. It's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, considering that it would probably take us, I don't know how many games now would it take us, five, six, seven games to get up to that many?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, the story of the crowd will continue, listeners, but we're going to just have a quick look at this 1-1 draw at Coldblow Lane, played, as I say, in front of 33,000. I found a great photo from the Birmingham Gazette, strangely, showing a packed halfway line. I'll stick this online when we put the show out. Lansdale, the Mill goalkeeper, saved during an attack by the Corinthians in the cup replay at New Cross, says the caption. And the ground is absolutely chock-a-block. Forsyth hit the post, Neil, before Corinthians opened the scoring on 35 minutes in this game. They took the lead.
Yeah, Hagan, who actually caused Millwall problems in both games, put in a cross, and there was old Walter Robbins, scored a foot shot. Walter Robbins, actually, I believe, for those older listeners, the Walter Robbins Trophy in cricket, I believe, was played for by second 11s.
Right, okay.
It might even still be there. But, yeah, no, that was a... Yeah, well, that would have caused a few murmurs around the den, wouldn't it? Scoring with a left-foot shot.
Absolutely. Thankfully, a 57th-minute equaliser for Poxton after good work by Jack Cock to produce that chance. And of course, these games were played with no floodlights, Neil, so you know, the match notes have got this talks of the gloom of extra time. I suppose if you kicked it off at 3 o'clock in January, it's going to get dark from maybe they kicked it off earlier. It'll be getting dark about 4 o'clock at that time of the year. So as for the first game, it was played in weather-driven gloom. This was played out in
natural gloom.
Natural gloom. It did finish one each, which took us to a second replay, listeners. This is they talk about player burnout in the modern era. Neil, I don't know what they would have called it back then. You just expected to make a go of it, weren't you?
Yeah, and don't forget, you actually had league games in between because we played this game at Stamford Bridge and we'd actually played there 2 days before drawing 0-0 with Chelsea.
Absolutely. It was work was tough, so was football. The two went hand in hand. So this is a second replay played on the 20th of January 1930. And this would have been far more decisive now, wouldn't it? The Lions would progress at last over their amateur opponents. 5-1, played at Stamford Bridge in front of 60,000 people, listeners. 60,000. Can you imagine?
Can you imagine 60,000 people now turning up, A, to watch a Millwall FA Cup side that's not played at Wembley or some other neutral venue? Shall we say?
Yep.
A and B, actually, a Millwall versus a non-league team.
A neutral venue. It was the third round, was it? I believe it was the third round of the FA Cup. So, you know, nowadays they play games with half the ground closed down if the opponents aren't sexy enough. So, no, you can't imagine it. 60,000 people. I've got a wonderful spread of photos from the Illustrated Sporting and Dramatic News series of photos. I will stick those online because they're just wonderful. I've got people packed around the touchlines at Stamford Bridge, which was an oval-shaped stadium. So this would have been not far short of what we saw with the famous FA Cup images of a cup final in 1923 with people sat along the side of the touchline and the byline,
wasn't it?
Dog Track Stadium, that's right.
Yeah, well, Wallam Green is a good friend of mine, like who supports Fulham, calls them.
Yeah, I'm loving this final match report, Neil. If you indulge me, I'm going to read it. It's from the Illustrated Sporting Dramatic News, and this is again, we've already said journalism has faded in its poetic nature, and I'm going to keep this theme going now because. As drowning men are said to come up for a third and last time before the end, so the Corinthians came up against Millwall in the FA Cup. Apparently, the legend is if you go down the third time, you're drowning by that stage. I thought, what way to lead in a match report? As drowning men are said to come up for a third and last time before the end, so the Corinthians came up against Millwall in the FA Cup competition last Monday at Stamford Bridge for the third time, having played two draws the previous week. And this proved to be their end too. A fine end it was, nonetheless, for men who are not specially trained for such gladiatorial fray. Hagen was away injured and Doggart missed his partner. Millwall were also about three of the team, which previously met their rivals. Up to half-time, the score was 1-1, one goal all. But when play was resumed, the professionals, whose defensive play was not always too orthodox, put on four more goals without, I don't know what they mean by that, put on four more goals without reply, Baker not having a good day in the Corinthian goal. During the three matches, 136,275 people watched the play and paid £10,125 for that privilege. And there were some great photos. you can't picture this kind of event anymore. Well, you wouldn't get second replays now. You certainly wouldn't get.
Yeah, we don't get. Yeah, we don't get one replay.
The club is now seen as a pain in the backside, and you know, so it's all the poorer for it. I think this is wonderful, wonderful stuff. A 5-1 win in the end for the Lions over their amateur opponents. I see the Corinthians have played the RAF team at the weekend prior to the game. It's a great fixture, isn't it? The Corinthians versus the Royal Air Force.
Yeah, but I think history was on our side because I think 7 years before that, the Corinthians had played Brighton in the FA Cup and they beat them in a second replay.
Right.
And yeah, but the papers were full of it. They just were determined not to give us any credit. We weren't going to get anything out of the London, the London News and the Daily Herald and
no, like that,
because they were so in awe of this non-league team
with the names loaded with the great and the good. The Illustrated News headline says it all: the Corinthians out of the cup, but gallant work versus Millwall. And I think that's probably not a bad headline in the circumstances. The Corinthians would in 1939 they would merge, as you've said already, with the Casuals, another famous name. And then the Second World War would intervene. The club would continue after the and still exists to this day. We were saying off air, weren't we, that they're based over in Tolworth, near Kingston, Worcester Park, out that way. If anyone lives over that side, I might make it my mission to try and get over to watch the Corinthian Casuals. Now, as you've inspired me, your show notes for this show have inspired me to try and get along to a Corinthian Casuals game during the World Cup break.
And we'll see. It was only that I bought a book by Norman Creek.
Yeah.
First ever, the original Corinthian Casuals history. And I was just flicking through it one day and fell across this and thought, oh, that'll make a nice podcast. And interestingly, in the back of this book, which was written actually in 1930,
yeah,
they've got a list of the members and their addresses, which when you're trying to trace people and you're trying to trace amateur internationals, gosh, yeah, but that ain't half helpful, I tell you.
I bet. Great badge, a monogram. You would expect nothing else from a club like Corinthians, listeners, would you, other than a monogrammed CFC badge? Founded 1882, dissolved, albeit merged with Casuals. They still exist, as we've said already. I'm going to close this show, Neil, if you'll indulge me once more. I keep asking for indulgences, listeners. It's our show, so
you normally ask. Would you mind if you go off on a tangent? At least we haven't had any tangents in this.
I'm going to indulge myself here. The closing quote on the Corinthians is from a book by Edward Grayson called Corinthians and Cricketers. From their foundation in 1882, within 20 years, the Corinthians were to become the greatest and most attractive team that football had then known. With an intelligent nonchalance and in their tailored shirts and well-cut shorts, they brought a quality and culture to the game. I like that. I intelligent nonchalance, Neil, and a well-cut shirt and shorts are right up my street, mate. So thank you.
You certainly won't find any intelligent nonchalance.
I'm trying to bring intelligent nonchalance to the Millwall scene, listeners. Thank you, Edward Grayson. Thank you, Neil, for this wonderful, wonderful choice. Millwall versus Corinthians.
It's Nick and Neil's Summer Millwall History Show.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.